Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the day after the New Hampshire primary, and already everybody's in South Carolina. It's the 11th of January. We go to the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio for our first hour this morning with guests who will analyze what happened yesterday. Professor Dante Scala is associate professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of New Hampshire and author of Stormy Weather, the New Hampshire Primary and Presidential Politics. Professor Scala, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Josh Rogers, who's a political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio, will join us for the first half of this show. Josh, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Any sleep last night, gentlemen?
A little bit.
And a very busy day today. Well, the results are showing that Mitt Romney performed about where the polls said he was going to be. No real surprises here, were there?
No, it was. I mean, it was surprising how, from wire to wire, you could look at the polls a year ago in New Hampshire and see where Mitt Romney was, and that's almost exactly where he landed last night, just a tick under 40% of the vote in New Hampshire. So, you know, the Romney campaign in New Hampshire made it look easy, but we all know the stories about front runners getting snagged up here or having to beat expectations and all of that, but Romney accomplished all that and more, and now he's looking more and more like the presumptive nominee of the party.
Mm-hmm. Has he, a lot of the people were saying last night in analysis that it's almost as though he's been running in New Hampshire for years and years. What's he been doing in New Hampshire for all those years?
Well, he does, the Romneys have a home on Lake Winnipesaukee, and so they spend time here, but certainly Romney and his people have been working it more or less ever since they got out of the race, building goodwill by coming up and campaigning for candidates up and down the food chain, applying those candidates with financial support, reaching out to influential people who supported John McCain in 2008, for instance, and just making his presence felt and deciding the voters that they needed to target to win. And that's one reason why Romney's support in the polls has been such. I mean, part of it's simply name recognition, but a lot of it is hard work, and they ran by far the most sophisticated operation here, and one that they put together over a long period of time and was built on, you know, the pragmatic considerations of the support they needed to cultivate in order to have a strong result.
And was the support pretty much across the board?
That's one thing that I personally found interesting, is that he managed to win, have the support of the most, you know, there are not many evangelical voters in New Hampshire, but among evangelicals, among voters who claim to be supportive of the goals of the Tea Party, which were areas that parts of the electorate that Romney's rivals hoped to capitalize on. Young people, by and large, did vote for Ron Paul, and independent voters were split. I mean, Romney certainly picked up almost as many as Paul, but some of those went to John Huntsman, who finished in third. But Romney built a coalition that spans the mainstream of the Republican electorate.
Yeah, one example that's interesting is looking at exit polls and ideology among the New Hampshire electorate. Now, the New Hampshire electorate tends to be has more moderate voters than, say, other primaries might. And basically, Mitt Romney did almost equally well among voters who identify themselves as liberals or moderates, but also did equally well among those who identify themselves as conservatives. So he really, Josh is right, he really straddled all sorts of potential fault lines in the Republican Party.
Well, how do you do that? What was the message that resonated with people with such different philosophies?
Well, I mean, in large measure, Romney's perceived aptitudes managing government and stewardship of the economy, you know, it fit a lot better with this election than last time in 2008. And so in some sense, his perceived aptitudes synced up nicely with the concerns of voters. But a lot of that is also just working it and, you know, name recognition and, you know, being present. He campaigned a lot here. And again, not to reiterate this too much, but his campaign really knew how to target voters. And, you know, elections are also not simply about the candidate who wins, but it's about the alternatives. And, you know, the alternatives weren't hugely strong in New Hampshire. Some of them got late starts here. None of them were as well funded as Romney, and I don't think that can be underestimated.
I think Mitt Romney's rhetoric also mattered. He made a point not so much of going after other Republicans, although his super PAC in Iowa was another matter, of course. But when Mitt Romney was speaking, he usually didn't single out Republicans. He concentrated all his rhetorical firepower on Barack Obama. That was true on the opening day of his campaign in New Hampshire, and that was true
last night.
When he gave a speech that sounded an awful lot like a general election speech. And so I think that helped to placate conservatives as well, who might have thought, well, Romney's wobbly on this issue or has changed on this issue. At least they think he's going to bring the fight to Barack Obama.
What is this deal he's on when he keeps talking about Europe and comparing Obama to failed European? Is he talking about healthcare policies? Is he talking about the economy in Europe? What is that? And is that an effective campaign issue?
Well, I think he's talking about both of those things, but he's also casting himself as a figure who wants to restore America to its core principles, its foundational documents. And, you know, in some sense, he's reaching out and going for a you know, not particularly fiery version of the sort of Tea Party rhetoric. I mean, one thing that's been remarkable to me, at least, is that I've covered several presidential elections, and I've never heard an election where every single candidate, seemingly at every single event, talks about how you know, Americans were endowed by the Creator to pursue life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And so, you know, rhetoric like that, which would, you know, reach to the most conservative reaches of the Republican Party, but also, you know, not alienate mainstream voters, is commonplace. But I mean, he's certainly trying to cast himself as a figure who's going to restore America, and it's and cast President Obama as somebody whose views are alien to what has made America great in the eyes of Republican voters. And so certainly the looking to Europe is not something new. I mean, we heard that in the last election. Rudy Giuliani used to talk that way a lot. And so I think he's trying to achieve a number of things on that front.
Is it or is it not a variation of he's really not one of us?
In what sense do you mean?
In
the sense casting
of,
himself as sort of the other more broadly. I mean, I think
in sense of, you know, this whole the whole controversy about the birther thing. Is there an element of that, small as though it may be? He's not really an American.
You know, there is that. I mean, Romney doesn't come out and say as much, although one of his sons told a joke relating to at least he said it was a joke relating to Barack Obama's birth certificate a couple weeks before New Hampshire. But I think there is this sense that, you know, Romney has this problem with values voters. They're not entirely trustworthy of him, or they don't entirely trust him on issues such as abortion, gay marriage. But Romney certainly makes a point that patriotism is a value, and he elevates that to this kind of moral status and uses it to criticize President Obama.
I mean, he's been declaiming patriotic songs on the campaign trail for some time, particularly, you know, lesser known verses of America the Beautiful. And it is interesting. I mean, I agree with Dante that it's in some sense to placate values voters. You know, certainly there's been questions about how Romney, being a member of the Church of Latter-day Saints, plays with some of those folks down south. And he's looking quite strong now. So I think he's touching on a number of things, but certainly he's, you know, wanting to tap into the sentiment within the Republican Party that, you know, President Obama is transforming this country into something that that is atypical, even if and, you know, you can wrap any number of things around that. So there's kind of a dog whistle element to mm-hmm. the hardcore within the Republican Party. But it's also trying to cast as an optimistic. He's sort of, you know, talks a lot of Reagan style stuff about, you know, restoring America to the city on the hill, et cetera.
And as Kennedy had to take on Catholicism in 1960, will Romney, because he would be the first presidential candidate, major candidate to be a Mormon, will he have to take on this issue?
Yeah, and he may have to take on that issue within his own party and, you know, maybe within the next 10 days. I mean, the question will be, you know, one thing is whether he feels he has the need to re-explore that. You remember 4 years ago, that was always the question. about how he should handle it. He went up giving a speech on religion, which was compared to the speech that JFK gave 5 decades earlier. It'll be interesting to see whether he and his advisors think that issue is settled. They don't have to address it again. But if evangelicals in South Carolina and in Florida refuse to get on board with Romney, or at least if not enough of them get on board with Romney, then maybe that will be something he needs to address. And then, of course, there's always the question in the general election, will people who dislike Romney because of his religion still turn out to vote, perhaps because they oppose and dislike the president more than they're skeptical about Romney's Mormonism?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one issue is also there, you know, the absence of a single candidate to the right of Romney culturally who seems strong may make this less fraught than it was last time. I mean, if you look at Newt Gingrich has his own sort of baggage, although certainly stories about renewal and asking for forgiveness resonate with hardcore Christians. I mean, you've got his personal baggage and his campaign is looking weak. Rick Santorum is also, you know, his ability to run a serious national campaign is in doubt. And, you know, Rick Perry, he was thought to be somebody who might galvanize people to the cultural right. He's been sort of a bust thus far, but was the fellow that Team Romney was most worried about someone who could potentially bridge the gap between establishment Republicans, Tea Parties, evangelicals, people. But, you know, he's going to have to turn his campaign around, you know, fantastically to emerge as a threat.
Nate Silver, who I think is a pretty good pollster, writes this morning, the conventional wisdom holds that South Carolina is likely to be the toughest test yet for Mitt Romney's campaign, but I'm not so sure that's true from his vantage point. Nate Silver's, Romney's position there looks fairly robust, and he projects him with 31.8% in South Carolina, Newt Gingrich number two at 24.2%. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Nate Silver's right. I mean, it's, you know, everyone looks at South Carolina, especially up here in New Hampshire, because it's such a different culture politically from ours, and says, well, South Carolina, that's where all those evangelicals live. They're going to – and even a candidate who can appeal to them can win South Carolina. But South Carolina often renders verdicts that favor establishment candidates. And I'm not at all clear if this is going to be any different an example than we've seen in the past where, say, John McCain – won South Carolina 4 years ago, despite the fact that he had some of the same problems with the evangelical base as Mitt Romney does. And you can go back 12 years to George Bush when he closed out John McCain with a win in South Carolina. So it certainly appears as if Mitt Romney is in a commanding position. And one wonders if party elites now, national party elites, will begin to put pressure, subtle and otherwise, on the remaining candidates. It's time to get out of the race. It's time to unify. It's certainly not time to make savage attacks on Mitt Romney and his career at Bain Capital, as Newt Gingrich is threatening to do.
Mm-hmm. And is it true, gentlemen, that you can't lose South Carolina and win the nomination?
Well, I mean, that's been the case.
Always? Yeah. That's always been the case, huh?
Well, since 1980, which is when they launched the primary there on the calendar, it has been the case. And as Dante was saying, it's kind of a scorched earth political landscape down there, but they have tended to fall in line behind the establishment Republican. And at this point, there's no doubt that Mitt Romney is that figure, despite some lingering discomfort in some precincts of the party. And, Ron Paul, it would be interesting to see how he does down there, because certainly it's a very different landscape for him down there than it was in either Iowa or New Hampshire.
I mean, hypothetically, if Romney lost South Carolina, certainly there would be doubts raised. And if followed, say, lost Florida as well, then everything would be back up in the air again. And really, we're basically off for a month in February, and Super Tuesday is not until March. However, that series of events would be completely contrary to basically everything we've seen in the recent history of the presidential nomination process. Mm-hmm. Typically, party elites circle the wagons at this point around the presumptive nominee.
I was watching Ron Paul last night while I was watching all of them. But it is amazing. People applauded when he talked about bringing everybody home, the young people, I assume, in that group. But this long, long, almost lecture about monetary policy, do people hang on every word when he discusses that?
Some people do.
Do they?
And he's really built an interesting coalition in New Hampshire with young voters, with people who are against foreign entanglements, with rural voters, with blue-collar voters. And some of those voters are not likely to be reached by a Mitt Romney, no matter what he may say or do. I mean, the chasm is just too vast. And where such a polyglot group goes in the short term, it's hard to see them moving away from Paul. And certainly Paul, he says that, this is about keeping his message out there. I mean, I think few people, including Ron Paul, are under any view that he is going to become the nominee. But perhaps the GOP is in some sense moved towards Paul. I mean, the financial strains that the country is under and the budgetary issues have made some of his doomsday stuff, which is how many in the Republican Party saw it 4 years ago, seem more plausible. And fatigue with fighting overseas has put his views more in the mainstream. Certainly South Carolina is a little different landscape. Republicans down there are perceived to be a lot more hawkish. New Hampshire has a high percentage of veterans, a lot of whom, Ron Paul has support among veterans. South Carolina has a lot of veterans too. It will be interesting to see if he can pick up traction there.
Yeah, I mean, for all the reasons Josh mentioned, I think Ron Paul's success last night was the most interesting story to come out of New Hampshire last night. I mean, Mitt Romney's campaign, very effective, but rendered the primary rather boring as an exercise. But Ron Paul, though, had a very impressive organization here as well. They're running very sophisticated ads. They spent a lot of money on advertising in New Hampshire. So this isn't, I think, political observers need keep raising the ceiling on Ron Paul. First, he was just this very kind of niche libertarian candidate. He certainly can't get better than 5% of the vote. And then it bumped up to, say, 10% of the vote. And this time we went through the same exercise again. Well, he's up to 15%.
Yes.
Well, he certainly can't get 20. And so we observers keep raising our ceiling. And I think at some point we all have to break down and say, this is an authentic force in American politics, and we don't understand it. I don't know if the Republican Party understands what it's got going on, and that renders Ron Paul a very interesting figure, but potentially a dangerous figure for, say, a Mitt Romney, who appealed last night to mostly to suburban, affluent Republicans who live in the outer suburbs of Boston here in New Hampshire. But Mitt Romney, what's the message he takes to, say, a Ron Paul voter who's more likely to be young, more likely to be blue collar, more likely to live in areas of the country that perhaps have been left behind, especially by the Great Recession?
And your thoughts on a possible third party bid by Paul?
I think that's a danger that could doom Mitt Romney's candidacy. If Ron Paul, let's say, decided after all to take the candidacy, and I'm sure it would be his to take the candidacy of the Libertarian Party, that could be something that could really put a wrench in the works. But it would certainly make for, I would say, a much more interesting debate if Ron Paul could be up on the stage with both Barack Obama and, say, Mitt Romney.
I mean, Ron Paul has been asked this many times, and of course he did run as a Libertarian in the past, and he typically says, I have no intention to do so. Sometimes he bristles when you ask him the question, but he always reserves the right. He says, I have no plans to do that at this time. I mean, there is some thinking that, Ron Paul is 76 years old. His son Rand Paul is a senator from Kentucky, that, he may seek the office of the presidency, and that, some people think, that he wouldn't want to poison the well among Republicans with his son. So, but a lot of people are going to be watching that.
It's striking to me, teaching at the State University of New Hampshire, how among young people, if you look for a grassroots activity, it certainly hasn't been for Mitt Romney. It's really been for Ron Paul.
Yes.
And if you talk to a young conservative these days, that seems to be the direction that they're headed.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls. We're talking with two guests who are joining us from New Hampshire Public Radio Studios. Dante Scala is associate professor in the Department of Political Science at the university and author of Stormy Weather, the New Hampshire Primary and Presidential Politics. Josh Rogers joining us for about four more minutes, political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Both of them were delighted to share their time today. We thank them for it because they're busy guys today. They've been busy guys for a while. We go to your phone calls, 800-486-8655. You can send an email if you'd like, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655. Josh, I know you have to go. Just say goodbye when you have to go, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Mike in South Milwaukee, our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. I have an observation. I wonder whether anyone else sees it. Mitt Romney's been described as plastic, other adjectives describing him as wooden. I'm a retired physician, and I think this guy is weird. And I'm wondering whether he's just a high-functioning Asperger's syndrome. When he interacts with other people, he doesn't read cues. He doesn't read social cues. He makes inappropriate statements. I think there's no question about that. There's something unusual about this guy. And I see it. Does anybody else see it?
Huh. I've never heard that before. I've heard the weird social interaction, but not a Asperger's syndrome. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, I'm not going to hazard a diagnosis. Certainly, you know, Democrats have tried to cast Mitt Romney as weird. And, you know, he's not exactly liquid out there on the stump in terms of dealing with people. He does have, you know, even people close to him, you know, have described him as a bit goofy in terms of his sensibility. And sometimes he can seem a bit dated, as if he emerged from some time capsule from, you know, the 1950s or early 1960s. But, you know, Romney has proven himself an effective salesman for years as a missionary for the Church of Latter-day Saints, surely in business and, you know, as a politician. So, you know, Mitt Romney does have his quirks, and there have been some interactions on the campaign trail that reflect those. But, I'm not sure it's a clinical condition.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, Mitt Romney, I think that one of the chief differences between the Mitt Romney of this year and the one 4 years ago, I think he and his advisors made a decision that he should run as the candidate he actually is and the person he actually is, not as the candidate he thought social conservatives wanted him to be, because that failed in 2008 when Iowa conservatives were left with a choice between, say, someone who said all the right things and someone who clearly wore his values on his sleeve, like Mike Huckabee, someone authentic, to borrow the political cliche of the day. You know, they chose Huckabee. And I think this time around, Mitt Romney decided, enough, I'm just going to campaign as the candidate I am. And if they take me, they take me. And I think that was a wise thing to do, because right now he's really hitting the sweet spot of the American Republican electorate, which is what we describe as, you know, somewhat conservative voters. And Henry Olson of the American Enterprise Institute talks a lot about somewhat conservative voters in the polling really being the ones who decide who gets the nomination. And certainly here in New Hampshire last night, Mitt Romney did very well among those, you know, moderate conservative voters. And New Hampshire is full of that kind of voter. And so this was a good test case for him.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike, very much. Interesting call. Matthew in Dunn County. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Kathleen and guests. Real quick, I think it would be interesting if Ron Paul didn't achieve the GOP nomination, ran as an independent with Dennis Kucinich. I heard this on Talk of the Nation yesterday, and I'd been thinking about it before I heard that, and I think that's pretty interesting. And then one other thing real quick, I refer to Mitt Romney as Guy Smiley. So I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Matthew.
Well, I don't think that the Paul Kucinich ticket is likely, but it is true that that Paul has been pilloried by Rick Santorum. I think described his foreign policy as being to the left of Dennis Kucinich, but I don't think we're likely to see a Paul Kucinich alliance on a ticket ever.
It's interesting though. I mean, Matthew makes a good larger point, which is, you know, it's, you know, in some ways we think about politics as left versus right and so forth, like a straight line. But you look at Ron Paul and you look at Dennis Kucinich and you look at the Occupy movement, and sometimes politics, you know, looks something like a horseshoe, in the sense that you look at what some might describe as the far left, you know, the Occupy movement, and you look at someone like Ron Paul, who might be considered in some circles far right. They do seem to agree on a number of things. They do seem to agree about the negative role of elites in this country, and that elites need to be regarded with skepticism, especially those who run the government, but also those who run the financial system, the monetary system, and so forth. You look at both Kucinich and Paul would be anti-war candidates. They would agree, they would disagree. Josh is absolutely right on probably more than they agree, but they would agree on that. And so it's interesting, you know, Ron Paul in some ways seems a kind of a throwback to the late 1960s, when you had these populist movements going on, you know, both on the left and on the right.
Well, I wonder if he's captivated. We had Ralph Nader on yesterday, who was enumerating in his new book all of the corporate actions that have taken place, the taxpayers getting messed over, and, you know, that mad as hell, not going to take it anymore kind of fervor that some people on Occupy Wall Street and some people in America, the progressive movement, have. Who's going to respond to those people? It's almost as though the Republicans can take in more of people with various political viewpoints than the Democrats at this point. You have a lot of people who are not very happy with the current administration, who are very upset with both parties when it comes to super PACs, when it comes to Citizens United and corporate irresponsibility. What happens to those people in a general election? Who speaks to them?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, presuming that if we were to presume that Mitt Romney claims the nomination, he's not likely to be somebody to whom those folks are going to gravitate. And, you know, certainly his role in private equity and you know, Bain Consulting and Bain Capital that, you know, has been aired, you know, in the closing moments of the New Hampshire primary, and we're going to hear more about, suggests that, you know, Mitt Romney is not likely to be the candidate of the so-called 99% is going to think,
no,
aha, here's our man. So where those folks go and where the sort of populist wing of the Republican Party, which certainly Ron Paul spoke to in New Hampshire and, you know, maybe some others could speak to persuasively in South Carolina, we'll see where they go is interesting. I mean, a lot of those folks are also frustrated with President Obama.
Yes,
so
they
whether
are.
Or not those folks sit out or which direction they will be one of the more interesting things to watch, I think.
Yeah, I think Josh really puts his finger on it. I mean, there's a lot of disillusionment. And I'm curious to see, you know, for instance, what my students from UNH decide to do in the fall of 2012. Because certainly in the fall of 2008, it was clear that UNH University of New Hampshire undergraduates were certainly very enthusiastic about Barack Obama. Will that continue in 2012? And, you know, what will young conservatives do if they're confronted with a Mitt Romney candidacy? But really, again, Ron Paul voters and Mitt Romney voters live in two different universes. In one universe, you know, a comment like corporations are people, that's perfectly fine. Because, I mean, in the legal business world in which they live, the upper middle class suburban world in which they live, that all makes sense. They all work for corporations and so forth. But for perhaps a blue collar rural voter, and I'm curious what if Ron Paul resounds in places like Wisconsin, of course, in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Michigan. It's a different world.
Yes. Tom in Manitowish Waters. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I heard yesterday you questioning one of your people about you seem genuinely puzzled why Romney thinks we're headed towards a European situation. I think it's pretty obvious. In Europe, you get free education, free health care, 6 weeks vacation, huge pensions, and it's all making them bankrupt. And he thinks, and I agree, that Obama's economic policies and political philosophy are leading us towards that sort of a situation with the distribution of wealth that he's in favor of, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the comparison is very valid and very obvious.
Who wants to respond? Both of you, perhaps.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting question. The role of the social welfare system in the United States, I think, will be a key factor and a key touch point in the national elections. And, you know, again, we get back to white, blue-collar workers who are not especially – were never especially enamored with Barack Obama. And judging by how they've suffered in the economy for the past 4 years, they don't really have a good reason to vote for Barack Obama, arguably. However, they do like the social welfare system. They do like the fact that they will get Medicare and that their parents get Medicare now. They do like Social Security. They do think the safety net is a good thing. So if Republicans go after Democrats about redistribution of wealth and so forth and so on, Democrats seem eager to take the fight to Republicans on issues like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And how Mitt Romney decides to try to thread that needle, because he is kind of casting himself as a champion of the middle class. He often said on the stump here in New Hampshire, well, I don't think there should be a tax. You know, the rich are doing well enough. I think there should be tax cuts for the middle class. So he is trying to pivot toward being a champion of the middle class. But will that play out if Democrats can cast Romney as someone, you know, who's from the 1%, so to speak?
I mean, I think Dante's definitely right in terms of, you know, Mitt Romney stood out among the Republican candidates in terms of even uttering the words middle class on the trail. You really didn't hear that from the others. You know, certainly to the caller's point, you know, long-term liabilities for, you know, Social Security, for Medicare and costs, as well as for, you know, public employee pensions. And I certainly don't need to remind you.
No, you don't.
in Wisconsin about that. But certainly, you know, stoking antipathy towards public sector employees, public sector unions, who are, of course, a key part of democratic machinery in terms of getting people elected, is something that that, you know, Republicans talk up, and certainly absent and, you know, Romney's been talking about President Obama, you know, giving in to unions, being captive to them. He talks about appointing, you know, what Romney calls public labor stooges to the NLRB. This is rhetoric that is common on the GOP campaign trail. But to the caller's point, there are, you know, big questions about absent changing, either raising more money or reducing benefits, the long-term implications of the nation's borrowing and whether that sends us on the path of European countries.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rick Santorum kind of put his finger on it during one of the debates. He made this point, well, look, who's more electable, Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum? I, Rick Santorum, am a working-class Republican. I represented Western Pennsylvania. I represented a Democratic district as a conservative Republican. I won the swing state of Pennsylvania as a U.S. senator. The Republican Party is going to need a nominee who can appeal to blue-collar voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, other swing states. And can Mitt Romney fit that bill? Can he appeal to those voters and convincingly say, your interests are my interests, I will keep your interests at heart? And that's a key question going forward, even if, you know, regardless of whether Mitt Romney gets the nomination, which I believe he will. That's a general election question that could affect the fate of both candidates, obviously.
Yes. Thank you, Tom, very much for the call. Josh, do we need to let you?
I'll take my leave now, but
okay.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again sometime. Thank you.
Anytime.
Josh Rogers is political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Has a busy day, so he's going to leave the microphone, our microphone, for a while. But Dante Scala will continue with us until the end of this hour. Associate Professor, Department of Political Science at the University of New Hampshire, and author of Stormy Weather, the New Hampshire Primary and Presidential Politics. We're welcoming your phone calls. He's joining us from the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. What about, this has been getting stirred up for some time now, Rick Perry, one of the candidates, accusing Romney of vulture capitalism, a lot being made of Bain last night, and whether or not he was involved in a lot of these companies that took over other companies and fired people and getting in some trouble for comments about firing people. Will Republicans do the dirty work for Democrats in South Carolina and beyond on this particular issue? What about this issue? It's a big issue in the country. We'll ask Professor Scala about that and take more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go back to phone calls, and there are many of them, Professor Scala, what do you make of the issue of vulture capitalism, of Romney's record as a businessman, and whether or not, he did fire a whole lot of people when he made his money? If this is an issue that will resonate among voters in South Carolina, and whether or not it's an issue that would resonate in the general presidential campaign?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly was set up to be a debate that would, or an issue that would resonate in the general election campaign. I think Barack Obama and the Democrats were certainly thinking in those terms. But it is striking to me how it's arising as an issue in a Republican primary. Because typically we think, you know, Democrats sometimes divide themselves by social class. Blue-collar Democrats versus white-collar Democrats, or as Ron Brownstein of National Journal puts it, beer Democrats versus wine Democrats. But we're seeing a similar trend here, perhaps with this, you know, Rick Perry talking about two different kinds of capitalism, because I think a New Hampshire Republican, you know, suburban, affluent, perhaps working for corporations, hears that sort of talk coming from Rick Perry and says, but wait, aren't Republicans pro-business? You know, aren't Republicans pro-corporations, pro-venture capital, like what Mitt Romney did for a living? Doesn't he understand how capitalism works? And now that may play differently, say, with, again, a more blue-collar Republican who considers, you know, listens to Rush Limbaugh, considers himself to be a conservative, but might still have suspicion of large corporations. So it would be striking if Republicans, start to divide themselves along class lines. But I will say it will be interesting to watch how heated the rhetoric actually gets in South Carolina. Or will party elites, you know, subtly and perhaps not so subtly try to douse the flames before they get too high? I mean, because sometimes it's a good thing for parties to have contested primaries. It creates better candidates. It creates more enthusiasm and so forth. But if there's a bitter battle between blue-collar and white-collar conservatives about the nature of capitalism, I'm not sure that's going to play all to the benefit of whoever the nominee of the party turns out to be.
Oh, but what a great debate to have. The nature of capitalism, right?
Well, in the sense that, we saw the Occupy New Hampshire movement outside of the Radisson Hotel in Manchester, where all the media elite were gathered. So there was the elite on one side of the street and the Occupy movement on the other side of the street. And they looked to be on the periphery. But I do think that this populist movement has really made headway in being absorbed into our political conversations. And that's taking place, again, in unusual ways, both in the Democratic Party, of course, but also in the Republican Party. Ron Paul's one example. Maybe South Carolina will be another example.
Jerry in Madison. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, good morning. See, I was wondering, Kathleen, if your guest knew how Ron Paul voted for the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war.
I know he voted against sending troops to Iraq. I'm not sure about Afghanistan.
Yeah, and I'm not sure as well. I'll try and figure that out as I'm talking with you. But I think he was against, my sense is he was against both wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan. But I can't say for sure about the latter.
Mm-hmm. What do you think
thanks.
All right, Jerry, thanks very much for the call. Rick in Madison. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on. I had a question, and it was along the lines you were talking about, which is, I think that there are two great movements in the last, say, 4 or 5 years politically, the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. Both of them have a similarity in that they're disenchanted with the existing political system, and I think that there is a broad groundswell that the two parties basically distill up candidates that do represent and support the 1% kind of sector of society in terms of the institutions. I think that in that regard, that this kind of hybridization of, or basically a search for a candidate that's honest and is outside the political system is really strong, and that I think that that's a dynamic that I think is really a question mark, because I'm not sure whether Barack Obama or Mitt Romney can mobilize those people. And if somebody could, I think that that could be a huge unknown and potentially change to our political system.
Well, let's play with this for a moment, Rick. Who would that person be, do you think?
Well, you know, and here's, I'm going to go out there and say, I don't think it matters. I think if there is a person with integrity, and I think that's where the appeal of the Ron Paul candidate is, even though he's a terrible campaigner, he makes boring speeches about financial policy, but people believe that he's honest and he's going to vote his principles, and his principles, even if you don't agree with them on everything, that he basically has very strong opinions that are in sync with people on big issues that affect the direction of the country. I think I'm not a Ron Paul fan, actually. I have some serious issues with him on several sectors, but I think people are disgusted with Congress and with politicians. Mm-hmm. You can see that in the polls.
Mm-hmm. Dante.
Yeah, I think you see, I mean, in New Hampshire, there's always this kind of search for a candidate with authenticity. And it's striking to me that, you know, it's the primary, you know, happens every 4 years, of course. And so it serves as a, you know, a marker to tell us how things have changed. And because it's been 4 years, there's always something of a surprise. And I think Ron Paul was the surprise to me. For example, I thought that, you know, John Huntsman, the former Utah governor,
yes,
might surge. But instead, it was Ron Paul who did better than all the pundits like myself expected. And again, there's this authentic message. There's just, you know, always this search for authenticity. And you listen to Ron Paul, and I mean, again, he's nothing if not perfectly consistent in his views, which he expresses. I mean, he's, you know, Ron Paul in 2012 sounds like the same Ron Paul of 28. The only difference being that, you know, as he often says, his views are taken more seriously now than they would have been in 28. So that's a key thing. And again, you know, it's always the case that my students are always on the alert and are very sensitive to any whiff of hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Ron Paul tends to play so well among those voters in particular.
Mm. Pardon my asking, but are the eyebrows real?
You know, I've never been close enough. I've wondered that myself occasionally watching debates.
I know.
But I can't say, I certainly can't say for sure.
I read somewhere that one of them was falling off. And ever since then, I keep looking at his eyebrows. I know it's weird, but that's what's happening. Rick, thanks very much for the call. Ron in Blooming Grove. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. Let's consider relevant history. John McCain was the presidential nominee who was born outside the United States. He was born in the Panama Canal Zone, which certainly is not part of the United States now or when he ran for president. And I think that is the basis for the birther movement, is they decided to have a citizenship attack on the other guy in order to divert attention from the fact that their candidate nominee was not qualified to be U.S. president. A second point is about the economy collapse. Luckily for Obama, it happened just before he was elected, so they have to give some of the blame to Bush, even if they want to blame it all on Obama. In some ways, Osama bin Laden won, because after the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Federal Reserve started slashing interest rates that they charged to their member banks. Please look up on the Internet, Federal Reserve interest rates go back over these last 11 years, and you'll see a long staircase, just step down. They would have gone below zero, but they couldn't figure out how to do that. And that caused a horrendous overbuilding of real estate. And then the real estate market collapsed, both housing and the commercial sector and businesses. In a sense, Osama bin Laden provoked Bush and Bernanke into doing insane policies in the financial sector that caused the huge meltdown of 2008.
Professor Scala.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, it's another example of, I think, the influence of Ron Paul. And I wonder sometimes how much Ron Paul really wants to be the nominee of his party. And you know, occasionally he expresses ambivalence about the idea or expresses, you know, doubt that he could ever be the nominee. But I think why he's here in the race and why he will persist, I think he will go to the very last primary regardless of whether Mitt Romney is the presumptive nominee or not, is to gather delegates to send to the convention who think like him, who agree with him on issues such as, you know, the role of the Federal Reserve, whether there should be, you know, full transparency, whether it should be disbanded and so forth. I think that's Ron Paul's goal, is to change the conversation. And again, you know, as your caller mentions, I mean, if we think about the bubbles that we've seen in the economy over the past several years, the past decade or so, you know, there are things that Ron Paul points to which appear, you know, in retrospect, somewhat prophetic. Now, I'm not an economist, and I won't engage in a discussion of monetary theory, thankfully. But I think it is striking, you know, how much Ron Paul really has a more long-term vision than Mitt Romney's, which is to win the nomination of his party. Mm-hmm. And if I may add, I had my iPad handy. Ron Paul did vote for the use of force in Afghanistan after September 11th. As well as emergency appropriations, a vote he now says he regrets.
I see. Thank you for looking that up. Ron, thanks for the call. Joanne in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hi. The thing that concerns me, among many, is the money trail. And I watched Jack Abramoff bear a whole lot of his situation on 60 Minutes. And it seems to me that if we can't do something about that, like the PAC money, who's contributing to that, who owns those people, and how it gets back to Congress from, what do I want to say, people that are trying to influence votes. I can't think of the word this morning.
Lobbying?
Pardon me?
Lobbyists? Or?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
That wasn't hard. and he pointed out, it's not like someone hands someone else money, but someone will say, well, there's a vote coming up about such and I wonder if you might be interested in that. And we have some tickets available for a cruise, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And I think, just a quick comment, I think Ron Paul is making people think. And if there's just somebody else besides him that can really address these corrosive issues, I think we would be really happy. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanne. Dante?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as I mentioned before, I think Ron Paul would certainly make any sort of debate in the fall. It would certainly put a spin on things. And it would be interesting to see where Ron Paul would draw votes from in an election. I mean, one assumes that it would hurt, you know, the Republican nominee. But again, there are these young voters out there. You know, is there such a thing as an Obama Ron Paul voter, someone who voted for Obama on the promise of change, but is kind of disillusioned with that now? And so, again, I wonder, you know, if it's something, is politics a straight line or more of a horseshoe? Are there voters who want change, really change of the institutions themselves? And so even though Ron Paul sounds like a throwback to, well, he wants to go back to the original Constitution and so forth, this sense that we need to hit the reset button, that politics is broken and so forth, and all that will fix it is a complete reset, and that's required. I think you could find voters on both the left and the right who agree on that.
We have 45 seconds left. Jeff from Madison. I'm sorry, we'll have to make it fairly quick. Hi.
Yes, very quickly. I just wanted to had the comment that every time Mitt Romney's Bain Capital endeavors are brought up, he mentions that the goal was not job creation, it was the interests of the corporate shareholders that he was working for. I have to imagine that he will be bringing the same approach if he's elected, that he'll be working for those who put him in office, and perhaps those job creation may also take a secondary goal. That's it. I'll listen off air.
All right. Bye. Thanks for the call. Can you do it in 10 seconds, Dante?
That sounds like the opening salvo for 2012. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I know it's been a real busy time and today's a busy day. I hope you'll join us beyond New Hampshire.
Oh, sure. You're very welcome.
Thank you. Our guest, Dante Scala, Associate Professor, Department of Political Science, University of New Hampshire, author, Stormy Weather, the New Hampshire Primary and Presidential Politics, and just as many thanks to Josh Rogers, political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this very interesting show and incredibly timely show. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios, and thanks everybody for all of your highly interesting calls. Can't believe it's here again. Can you? The more shows we do like this, we're doing another presidential race. Time, it just goes by. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we're just going to have fun. We're going to talk about cars. I know a lot of you like to do that, so stay with us for the next hour.